Welcome. The peace revolution now continues.
It's a dream, so believe it. Now get ready to receive it. There is a peaceful solution. It's called a peace revolution.
Welcome to the Peace Revolution Podcast. I'm your host and navigator, Richard Grove, and this is where we step out of the confusion, fear, and anxiety of everyday life to relax into some knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. This podcast is commercial-free thanks to your support, and if you're new to all this, you can start by consuming our media for free at tragedyandhope.com. Tragedyandhope.com acts as the common ground for our team of independent media producers, with over 15 million downloads and counting. Also, for those of you who want more media, more often, be sure to check out the Tragedy and Hope online community and our partner podcasts, Gnostic Media, Corbett Report, Media Monarchy, Maria Heller, and the School Sucks podcast, all of which are likewise commercial-free and focused on helping you identify and fill in your blind spots with educational media productions. A great alternative to watching corporate-sponsored TV. Thanks for sharing this podcast everywhere you can. It's how we grow without marketing, advertising, or otherwise resorting to lowering our artistic integrity. So I hope you feel as I do, that each episode is getting more and more exciting. I'd also like to mention, in addition to the How to Defeat the New World Order podcast number 7 we did with James Corbett, CorbettReport.com has also posted the full audio from Paul Verge's 2007 film, Hijacking Humanity, as a preface to Paul's upcoming release, Believers Beware, the sequel to Hijacking Humanity. James also did a video interview, also available as audio, with Paul Verge over the weekend, so I've reviewed the early, unedited version of that, and I think Paul does an excellent job. I highly recommend you check it out if you have the means. Next up, I'm proud to announce that the Peace Revolution podcast now has listeners from every continent on the planet, with the exception of Antarctica. So that's a great sign that the message of learning how to think for yourself is making its rounds. To those of you listening in New Zealand, Australia, Japan, Europe, Africa, and South America, in addition to North America, thank you for making the time to listen and to take action to spread the peace revolution to as many people as possible. Today's message could be the most valuable thus far in the Peace Revolution podcast, because this is where I show you an example of how the Trivium works in action, in more ways than one. If you remember my 2006 virtual audio meeting titled Project Constellation, you'll recall that after many failures in attempting to get the word out, that Maria Heller published it on Memorial Day 2006, a message that still resonates to this day because it continues to point out how to move forward and make meaningful progress. If you haven't yet heard Project Constellation and read its transcript, there are links in the show notes on peacerevolution.org. So here's how that message and what it inspires is about to come full circle after 4 long years of work. In episode 7, in addition to defining the New World Order so as you can understand how to defeat it, I mentioned briefly the project on which we're working with famed screenwriter George Clayton Johnson. Today's episode is an abbreviated version of the virtual audio meeting that I recorded in June of 2010 titled Parhesia, a message to George Clayton Johnson. In other words, it's the correspondence which helped to catalyze the pattern of deception, the working title of our group project with George. But first, maybe we should take a step back and learn what inspired Parhesia in the first place. I first heard the word from Dr. Cornel West of Princeton University, wherein during an interview he dropped this word, Parhesia. And I thought to myself, well, either he just made up a word, or he referred to a word with which I'm not familiar. So I looked it up, and when I discovered the definition of parhesia, it was ironic how it had escaped me and basically everyone else I knew for so long. So I think that when you hear the definition at the beginning of parhesia, the message to George Clayton Johnson, you'll see what I mean. So hold that thought. Let's address the question. how did we get invited to send a message to George? Interestingly enough, Jan Irvin of the Gnostic Media Podcast and longtime friend has also been friends with George Clayton Johnson for 20 years or more. And recently, during Jan's interview with George on the Gnostic Media Podcast, George indicated interest in working on a group project. He just wasn't sure what the subject of that project might be. A few months later, Jan and George were talking, and Jan mentioned the idea of the trivium and how you can use it to spot the lie and point out the intellectual bankruptcy of the liar. And George quickly identified the value of the trivium method and thereby invited me to pitch him on a prospective project, which I did by sending a package to George, including a virtual audio meeting on 2 CDs and a stack of documentation reflecting a practical application of the trivium method of critical thinking. What you're about to hear is my pitch to George. It's my attempt to communicate a really big idea that I hadn't really put into words yet, but this opportunity to correspond with George and get him interested in doing a group project gave me the opportunity to think through things that I had recently learned and was trying to apply. It's the step we took which catalyzed the translation of our idea into a meaningful reality. And I thought it might benefit you to listen how, after many, many failures over many, many years, we finally scored a direct hit. Because not only did George embrace and integrate the ideas that we expressed, but he started teaching the trivium in his weekly writing class. Over the past 11 weeks, we've held weekly conference calls with George totaling over 20 hours of research and development on the phone. Well, actually over Skype. George is on the phone, but Jan and I and Paul are on Skype. Each week, chipping away at the process of producing a screenplay. Without disclosing the key ideas of the plot, I can say this. It's a representation of what happens if the status quo remains unchanged. And in that future time, a group of people come together to discover the lost tools of learning and the trivium, whereby they learn how to learn for themselves and outgrow the status quo. So as you listen, please keep a few things in mind. Firstly, I'm making a pitch for a project to someone I had never met. So during the meeting, I asked George to suspend his disbelief and imagine that he was someone conditioned into supporting the status quo. That's the target audience of the pitch, of which George definitely is not a part. But since he's an artist, he certainly has the ability to imagine what it would be like. Secondly, this is part 3 of the message, so I'm going to cut from the definition of parhesia and my introduction to George to the actual pitch for the project, which we're now engaged in. There's also a series of print attachments which are referenced during the meeting, and I've posted these in the episode notes on peacerevolution.org. Lastly, if you're interested in a comprehensive conscious curriculum, which is the point of the whole message, I have a beta version ready to be released to the subscribers of the Tragedy and Hope online community. So if you're a trial subscriber, please consider becoming a benefactor and supporting our work so that you can access the curriculum and simultaneously support our ability to continue producing meaningful media. That being said, the cost of running the Tragedy and Hope online community, producing the podcast, and producing our video show is currently exceeding the income from these resources and donations by about $450 a month over the past 12 months. So for the past year, we've been taking a serious loss, hoping to catalyze an audience big enough to at least enable this project to pay for itself. So if you have the means, we're not looking to profit here, but it is reasonable to ask that it would not cost us so much out of pocket, and we can't continue much longer without people getting active and voting with their dollars. So I'll appeal to you to identify a few products or services which you currently support, services which do not contribute to your long-term goals and contradict what you're after, and send part of what you save by canceling those services to us and our partner podcasts so that we can all keep growing together in the right direction. This is episode 8, Parhesia, a curriculum for intellectual self-defense. Thank you for your support, and thank you for tuning in and not dropping out. Parhesia, a message to George Clayton Johnson, June 24th, 2010. Since I find it useful to give titles to my correspondences, let me take a moment to explain what I mean by parhesia, so that we can both start on the same page. In the classic discipline of rhetoric, parhesia is a figure of speech described as to speak candidly or to ask forgiveness for so speaking. The term is borrowed from a Greek term which means literally to speak everything and by extension to speak freely or to speak boldly. It implies not only freedom of speech, but the obligation to speak the truth for the common good, even at personal risk. My name's Richard Grove, and if pressed to label myself, I'd offer that I'm a human being who is an active, comprehensive student of a world inventory of human resources, potentials, trends, and needs. I seek to solve problems which are not being comprehensively or effectively addressed, and I do this by seeking to simplify, clarify, and economize through a process of creativity, fluidity, and integrity. And from time to time, I like to share some time management techniques which endeavor to make the world classroom into a place where it's safe and fun for everyone to learn at their own rate. It's a pleasure to make your acquaintance, and I'm extremely humbled and thus grateful for your granting me an audience to share some very positive energy with you, which I hope will prove to be an exchange of wisdom which then transmutes into a meaningful experience for all involved. This pitch is aimed at a general audience, so it's not specific to you. I'm not talking to you when I say you in this presentation, but this is something that I'd written up to present to a general audience to introduce the concept of the perfect product. So put yourself in the position of somebody who's out there who might not have gotten a package from Yon that gives you the trivium and you understand about the need for critical thinking, having been a first-hand thinker your whole life. Try to be somebody who's out there in middle America, fully conditioned by a public education system and a college education system and belief in the corporate status quo and that the politicians are really doing what they say, even though the last 8 presidents have all claimed that they are going to get us off petroleum within the next couple years. They really, in reality, have no plan of that. And innocent, everyday people who are out there investing their hard-earned savings into the status quo need to realize that that's not being done, and they need to do something to protect themselves and get themselves out of this situation, because there's no proverbial superheroes, Batman and Superman and these other guys from the comic books that are going to come in and save you. We have to save each other. And here's how it starts. I'm going to tell this last part of the story in 8 little parts. The introduction to the myth of the perfect product, why it's impossible, a noble purpose, a fortunate outcome, the perfect product, the opportunity, the goal, and the close. Part 1. The myth of the perfect product. You don't have to know anything to be negative, but you have to know a great deal to be positive. Buckminster Fuller. I think that integrity has a responsibility to honesty, because otherwise we're just contributing to a recurring loop of folly, which is the fuel source of the status quo and its beneficiaries, those who benefit from the status quo. And that being the topic I'm here to address, I'm going to start by being open and honest, because it displeases only those who do not value integrity, and ensures that my message falls only upon open minds who will likewise take action with integrity. You gathered here tonight are most assuredly familiar with part of the story I'm here to tell, as well as being part of it yourself. But my reason for scheduling this virtual meeting with you is because we only have part of the story, and I'd like to provide you with some parts that have been censored. And at the conclusion of this conversation, you'll have the rest of your life to explore it for yourself. So I only ask you that you grant me the benefit of the doubt, open your mind, and hear the meaning of this story by allowing me to relate the story without interruption. You and I are individuals, and what we do every day, though separately, we are connected to each other through the common ground that is this physical world. And there are events which most assuredly are adversely affecting you in a variety of ways at this time. And most likely, these events and their causality are not yet apparent to you. So my goal herein, if you extend me the courtesy, the benefit of the doubt, is to do my best to illuminate these shadows for you so that you can benefit from the experience of understanding. One might observe that the map that we've all been given in this world by the status quo is not reflective of the terrain that we have to travel as human beings. And time being our most valuable yet least tangible asset at this point, We don't want to waste any more of it than we have to, recognizing that we've lost our way a bit, and the environment is telling us this. And we sure could use a compass to find our way back to a place where we have a sustainable environment and a legacy that we can be proud to leave to future generations. John Adams once said that facts are stubborn things, and whatever be our wishes, our inclinations, or the dictate of our passions, they cannot alter the state of facts and evidence. And he said that at the Boston Massacre trials, before the country was even founded. Fact: life is predicated on survival. Fact: we are all on a giant rock flying through space, spinning at approximately 1,000 miles per hour. And none of us has the ability to survive while consistently separated from this planet. Fact: we are all dependent on air, water, food, and overall health to survive. Life demands learning. So do we want to learn before or after these crises that are ongoing continue to manifest us into extinction? So my question is, what are the people doing this? And in the presentation, I list these various examples of mass destruction by the status quo, the cutting down of the old growth forests and rainforests, the decapitation of mountains to rape the future of its resources, the privatization of water, genetically modified foods, depleted uranium, nuclear weapons, not to mention the ongoing BP oil spill poisoning our oceans. What do they know that we don't know? All I can see is if they continue to poison our environment, we can't continue to live. All I can see is that if hemp wasn't prohibited and human beings were accessing the natural resources given to us by this planet, we could find a sustainable way of living, but at the cost only of the status quo. So what do these people who are running our planet know? Or are they just out of touch with reality? Are they likewise victims of inheriting a legacy that was built by critical thinking, by the few, against the many, and they themselves not having critical thinking, they're just running it all into the ground? Let's take a look at our reality. Let's take a look at the status quo. Question: as individuals, we hold beliefs and values which are in direct conflict with human needs for survival. Isn't that oxymoronic? Fact: we all wake up into this world, exiting our dream state of sleep and reanimating our bodies. Fact: none of us has a process of predicting the future on a consistent basis with certainty. Therefore, we are all waking up every day and dealing with the unknown and the uncertainty which accompanies it on a near constant basis. Now, being that most people use ideologies and belief systems to make their decisions and to live their lives and to deal with uncertainty, I would have to note that all these belief systems that I've experienced and studied have this in common. They are dependent on a single miracle. And from that miracle, all this other stuff that they claim is possible. Christianity has numerous, including the virgin birth and the resurrection. Judaism has the claim that the creator of the universe sent a message to them through Moses that makes it up to us today as the 14,000 versions of the Bible. Science has the Big Bang, and the fact that Descartes had a dream while sleeping in the German city of Ulm while he was a soldier, wherein he talked to an angel who told him to go and use number and measure to conquer the universe. And out comes modern science. I mean, it's almost too ironic not to present it as a stand-up comedy act inspired by the universe. Here we are, an entire status quo that's killing us, all based on hypocrisy with the root cause of, hey, we don't have critical thinking anymore. So why not just grant ourselves a miracle and design our own experiential methodology instead of worshiping these old ideologies which clearly do not work anymore? They put people at odds, they divide and conquer, they keep people from discovering who they are. And as long as you're in a belief system, that means that somebody else had an experience, and a bunch of people who didn't have that experience decide to follow that person out of sheer cynicism. The word cynicism means to parrot or to do things that you don't know what they mean, but you're doing them anyway. You don't know what the stocking hung over your chimney with care or your Christmas tree are all about, but it has something to do with Jesus, and therefore, you're just going to go with it. Instead of having the actual experiences that created a character like Jesus and let him go around and help people. You can't do that with a big ego. And that's what the Western culture has been denied. We've been denied the pathways through which we can know ourselves and become mature adults. And therefore, we're kept in this adolescent state of emotional reactions and panic. That cuts off your thinking. Anger cuts off your thinking. Fear cuts off your thinking. You cannot problem solve in these states. So questioning our reality illustrates the multiple layers of myth upon which it's founded. This is the status quo, and it ceases to be real when the myths are revealed. Once these myths are revealed, you're dealing with reality, and reality presents new problems, unknowns, uncertainties, challenges, and obstacles, all of which are a shared responsibility among those inhabiting this spaceship Earth. So if you're part of this place, if you're on this rock flying through space, we all have something in common. And what the people are doing back in Coach, i.e. third world countries, as compared to what we're doing in America, i.e. first class, it does matter. If things are being done in the other parts of the world that are destroying the way we get oxygen or destroying the way that we can have clean water, just the fact that it's on the other side of the world does not make us immune from it. And as inhabitants of this same spaceship Earth, we all need to recognize our responsibility to each other if we want to get any place safely, and most people just want to raise their families and live a satisfying life. I suggest we figure out how to get there. So let's review our needs as human beings and then take a quick inventory of the problems most dangerous to the future of humanity here in the early 21st century. Basic needs. We all need food. We all need air. We all need water, and we all need shelter. The status quo is threatening our ability to fulfill our needs, not just here in America, but all across the world. When we have beliefs as placeholders for experience, we need to learn en masse to question our beliefs and ask, how do they benefit me? How does holding that belief benefit me? And if it doesn't benefit me in a direct way that enables my survival, then I don't need that right now. And what experiences could you undertake to test the integrity of your beliefs? Because if they're not as strong as you think they are, and they don't stand up to reality, how are they beneficial to you? And maybe you should consider finding a methodology to replace your ideology. When you question your thoughts and you question your beliefs and you question that which you've been conditioned to quote-unquote know, you start to identify these self-defeating beliefs. And once you identify that it's oxymoronic to keep them, and you learn how to drop these habits, you can replace them with methodologies which deliver consistent satisfaction. And that's a step in the right direction. So if we look at the current threats, let's start with the unknown. These would be like celestial events, 2012, things that we can't, as humans on this little rock flying around this celestial body called the sun, that we can't have any control or insight really over. So you have to take all these things into account and say, look, there's a big question of uncertainty there, and we can't do much about it. Okay, maybe we'll find a process that helps us deal with it. But meanwhile, back here on Earth, in America, we have people who are in the highest parts of our government and corporate infrastructure who are economic freebasing via bailouts and all these confidence schemes and all the other things that are described in the 2020 Hindsight DVD. Which, George, you have right there for viewing after you get through this. The point would be, we didn't factor in greed and panic. But they did. And that's how they make their money. You've got problems with light and power. How we're still getting, you know, our energy from nuclear fission. Or we're burning hydrocarbons. Or we're using this type of turbine, but it's not really that efficient when used in this situation, so we have to use a diesel generator to make it green. All this oxymoronic misuse of technology that has been developed, yet the very principles on which it's developed are still yet undefined. Nobody has a proper understanding, as far as I know, on this planet, among the scholars that are out there and available, to give electricity a definition that actually describes its form and function. And as long as the quote by Maxwell is still out there, that whoever defines electricity will make the greatest discovery in humankind. We need to think what that means. There is this undiscovered country. There is all this stuff that could be realized if we only understood the nature of what makes us human beings. And this gets to the heart of the matter. The heartbeat. An electromagnetic field being generated, pulsated, up and down, goes into physical reality, but it starts in a place that's outside of physical reality. And through this transfer mechanism,
we are able to do all the things that we do, and it powers our mind, and we need this stuff to survive. And yet we don't apply our mind or our bodies into creating solutions that can sustain our existence, simply because there are some corporations here with limited perspectives, and they have convinced everyone else to adopt these limited perspectives. It's caused problems in transportation. It's caused multiple problems in destruction to our environment, which I've talked about a little bit. But the problem is with ourselves and our ideas about war, not understanding that war is a racket and that war will continue to go on as long as it's profitable for the people who run wars to make profits. We have so much money and resources going into creating technologies that can help us win wars. All we're doing is whittling down our options to survive with every $1 billion spent on this new kind of missile defense technology and all this other stuff. The problem isn't with a place on the other side of the globe that's got a line drawn around it in 1919 and says this country is a threat to our existence. That's BS. It's our lack of critical thinking that takes this technology and turns it from friend to foe. The status quo is reflective of this. Human culture is no longer human culture. It's corporate culture. It's no longer artifacts being left by individuals. It's artifacts being left by these giant mega international corporations, which no longer reflect art. If you want to define culture beyond direct individual human expression, a culture is a collection of shared beliefs about how things are. And these beliefs are associated with myths and histories that form a self-reinforcing loop. And the collection of these beliefs and histories form the stories that define a culture, like America. Usually unnoticed, like the air we breathe, these stories are rarely questioned, yet their impact can be enormous. Beliefs that are questioned and aren't useful begin to fall away. The question is, do we want to keep this belief, or do we want to change to something that works better for us? So you and I face some immediate problems of near-term survival, and if we think about it, we probably have some responsibility to the people who will inherit the earth from us. And it's one of those situations where we need a miracle, a panacea, a cure-all that lets us all learn how to solve these problems for ourselves and move forward together in a more sustainable direction that isn't in conflict with human survival. So there's this idea that the status quo causes a problem. And rather than try to explain all the attributes of the problem, I'll explain the problem in terms of what's needed to solve it, presenting this list of attributes for a metaphorical perfect product. The perfect product would be low risk and high reward. The perfect product would provide immediate short-term benefits and consistent long-term benefits. The perfect product would reduce your workload and increase your productivity, efficiency, and effectiveness. The perfect product would facilitate emulation of its rational methodology rather than mandating worship of an irrational ideology. The perfect product would only pose a threat to humanity if it were to ever become absent from the market, as we have now. The perfect product would not lend itself to being misused as long as it was made available to all. The perfect product would act as a litmus test, a metric by which you can ascertain if you're receiving valid information. The perfect product would be a proverbial bullshit detector. The perfect product would insulate the audience from fear and emotionally driven rhetoric by providing a methodology to deal with the unknown and the uncertainty which accompanies it. The perfect product would provide a critical path through which conditioned responses and reactions adverse to human survival are unlearned. The perfect product would supply you with a never-ending stream of new tools to become an autonomous, first-hand thinking adult. The perfect product would make worrying obsolete. The perfect product would diffuse and dispose of ignorance, violence, and hatred by dispersing inspiration, love, and understanding. The perfect product would inspire confidence in the face of chaotic conditions. The perfect product would be useful to all problem-solving endeavors. The perfect product would enable consistent, productive, and non-coercive conflict resolution. The perfect product would facilitate self-control and character building. The perfect product would build and strengthen social and communication skills. The perfect product would not need to use fear, coercion, or force to proliferate its presence. Its simple and effective usage by individuals is its own driving force of communication. The perfect product would not depend on a continuous stream of hypocrisy, ignorance, and blind capitulation to myths and illusions in order to survive. The perfect product would satiate individual needs without creating a direct conflict with human survival. The perfect product would be a daily survival tool which is useful to each and every individual who learns to effectively use it, and therefore would be needed by everyone on the planet from now until the end of time. The perfect product would offer that which is not being offered elsewhere. The perfect product would be infinitely duplicatable. The perfect product would be non-toxic to human goals. The perfect product would quell greed and gangsterism by rewarding ingenuity and integrity. The perfect product would inspire collaborative cooperation rather than coerced capitulation and competition. The perfect product would be profitable for everybody. The perfect product would be symbiotic with our environment and the regenerative nature of our universe. The perfect product would be something that you can't lose. The perfect product would be something that you can't steal or have stolen from you. The perfect product would be something which increases in value and is resistant to entropy. The perfect product would enable you to learn to outgrow your fears. The perfect product would enable you to avoid emotional blackmail. The perfect product would allow you to defend yourself in a comprehensive manner. The perfect product would enable you to liberate your friends and family of parasitic beliefs, individuals or organizations who are preying on their hard-working daily actions. These organizations, individuals, and beliefs which feed on their unwitting ignorance, as these relationships do not deliver any discernible benefit. And in fact, if you follow where the money goes, a lot of times it's not where you think it goes. The perfect product would allow us to objectively observe our environment and provide a methodology to attain certainty. The perfect product would facilitate our communication of the solutions to the others. The perfect product would enable individuals to collaborate to enact those solutions. The perfect product would provide a methodology to discern fact from fiction and distinguish illusion from reality, thus giving us all a common ground to move forward upon. The perfect product would improve your certainty and judgment, making the results of your choices and actions something that brings satisfaction. The perfect product would act as a lens through which the audience or an individual can view reality with minimal distortion. The perfect product would encompass and teach you how to use tools to survive instead of making them into weapons to destroy. The perfect product would allow you to learn your way past regret by achieving consistent satisfaction. In short, the perfect product would facilitate the survival of the human race in every possible way. It would be a miracle, a true panacea. But it doesn't exist, and it's impossible. Let me employ the use of a metaphor. If you're a sailor out on the sea 2,000 years ago, and you don't have the sun or stars from which to navigate because it's so foggy every day, a tool of navigation, such as a compass, which allows a consistent metric of certainty, would allow us to actually build semi-accurate maps and thus expand trade and travel with certainty, making it a good investment. Today, we face a metaphorically similar problem, insofar as finding ourselves in a constant fog, provided thanks to our media and politicians. And it's a function of our status quo environment, which has denied us the tools thus far to see through these myths and to provide us with references as a method of certainty. Since these tools were purposely removed from our education system, it doesn't make sense to sit around waiting any longer for those who took it away. They unrightfully confiscated the most valuable tools on the planet. So I'm not going to wait any longer for them to give it back to the masses, who they now, by the way, control because they took the critical thinking away. I think that maybe it's time we're all done waiting for these miracles, because the only way we can make them happen for each other is to start learning. So let's start doing that right now. Let's learn why this is impossible. Let's learn why we should just stop at impossibility and say, well, that can't be done. No one's done it yet. It's impossible. Yeah, it's impossible. Like the idea of time travel. Someone experiences regret. They want to build a machine to achieve satisfaction. What if you had a philosophy or a methodology to eradicate regret by participating in a comprehensive, conscious curriculum? Philosophy being a tool of crisis management and risk mitigation, something that we're not taught. That's what it's for. It's out there. It's nebulous. But they never say, hey, look, these things can help you deal with uncertainty and save your life. We have access not only to a central axiom, which allows us to define certainty, but now we have access to unlimited mix and match tools of all these different philosophies from around the planet. And I think it's time we start looking into what's useful, what's not, and get her done. So let's take a look at why this is so-called impossible. Why would the perfect product be so impossible if it's what we need to survive? If the universe intends for us as human beings to survive, the universe will have to provide us a way to survive and give us a chance. And being that we're in this situation, we have no access to these tools in the past, and the fact that these tools that allow us to, hey, we can take control of the situation now. Critical thinking and problem solving is on the scene. That could just make the impossible quite possible if we look into the dynamics. And if we look into the dynamics, we might understand how the parts are all doing their job and how they do their job together and what the function of the status quo is. And if we understand how the status quo is made possible, I hypothesize that we might just find out how to make the impossible possible. So let's examine the status quo from a 50,000 foot perspective, if you will. Individuals and groups across the planet display deficiencies in knowledge, experience, tools, and communication skills. Our actions at any given time, no matter where you are on the planet, are dependent fully on the quality of information to which we have access at that time. If you find out a couple hours later something that could have helped you avoid injury a couple hours beforehand, and you didn't have that information earlier, you'd be regretful that you didn't have it. Thus, you'd want to create a time machine and go back and prevent that thing from happening. That's sci-fi. Let's talk about reality. When we lack information, or experience, or tools, or all of the above, most people are conditioned by mass media and the education system to react, not to think, but to react in one or all of three ways when presented with a situation where they lack knowledge, experience, or the tools to deal with the unknown. These three ways are known as frustrated, confused, violent, or destructive. 1, 2, 3. This results in fear, anxiety, stress, not only for the individual, but for those around them. And all these things pose risks to our freedom, individual and as a group, our health, and our overall survival as human beings going into the future. So here we are, this planet, this rock is supposed to be like 4 billion years old, and we've been around for, well, you know, history says a couple thousand years, where we look at the artifacts and we can ask questions and see that it goes on a lot further back. But we're not being told all that in our public school system. So, we have no process at this point in time, the early 21st century. Billions of people are without a process to deal with the unknown. And that's the process that we're all dealing with every day, all day almost. And because we don't have a process to deal with the unknown, this frustrated, confused, violent, destructive, all these things that happen creates panic and instills a loss of problem-solving skills in general, in individuals, and in their groups. I submit that personal security starts with your mind because you can't do anything without it. And most people think of self-defense as being physical, not cognitive in nature. But that's not an accurate picture of reality, because 99.9% of the situations dealing with the unknown and uncertainty that we have to go through in life involve words and not violence. And there's a lot that can be said in this area, but to keep this short and sweet, the overall inability to perform intellectual self-defense and problem solving, crisis management, risk mitigation has been prevented from being practiced by the largest part of the population. It is practiced by a very, very small, call them the 1%. And the 1% uses these skills as weapons against the other 99% who don't even know these skills exist, let alone have the ability and the access and the resources to defend themselves. So with 4 billion plus people on the planet following the orders of a small 1% and observing that there's no process to attain certainty with consistency, we're left without judgment. We're left with our best guess. So without a process to attain certainty, even our experts are pulling everyone's legs. And I find this to be a serious problem when you're talking about extinction of the entire species. I think we have some sort of responsibility here. So if we're unable to identify fact from fiction, we are unable to pass valid information to each other. And we are also unable to make informed decisions which do not generate regret. When this happens, you have what we have here at this time in the early 21st century, a failure to communicate, making problem solving nearly impossible, making it impossible to make the perfect product. But what if we ignored the impossible and just kept moving forward? At this point, I'd like to update the famous Arthur C. Clarke observation in the form of his quote, "My value add would be as follows. Any sufficiently advanced understanding appears indistinguishable from magic. In fact, it is magic." So here we have the idea of the impossible. And by looking at the idea of the impossible and comparing it to the existence of the status quo, we've made the impossible possible. But that wasn't our purpose. Our purpose was more in a noble sense, using the Oxford English Dictionary definition 4A of the word noble, of the mind or nature, the natural thing to do. This is kind of like our common ground, because what ended up becoming the perfect product was not intended to be a product, nor did we intend it to be perfect. We had a completely different goal in mind and that we were pursuing, and that we found by pursuing it in line with the natural state of the universe and not going against nature, that nature ironically presented us with something that becomes the perfect product, thus allowing it to self-fund its propagation to all who need it and would appreciate it at this time period. Noble purpose starts like this. Step 1, reconnoiter. Eliminate illusion and build a comprehensive perspective. Step 2, identify the root cause. And step 3, create a model which makes the root cause obsolete. So we found we could do this by comparing and contrasting the status quo to the idea of a perfect product. Now, I'd like to note that the status quo is based on ignorance. It's control by belief. It's an invisible form of slavery. And that literacy is a form of slavery until critical thinking is practiced by the reader. To illustrate my observation, I'd like to call upon a quote from a woman named Dorothy Sayers, who is a graduate of Oxford and spoke these words in 1947 in a lecture titled "The Lost Tools of Learning." "For we let our young men and women go out unarmed in a day when armor was never so necessary. By teaching them all to read, we have left them at the mercy of the printed word. By the invention of film and the radio, we have made certain that no aversion to reading shall secure them from the incessant battery of words, words, words. They do not know what the words mean. They do not know how to ward them off or blunt their edge or fling them back. They are a prey to words in their emotions instead of the masters of them in their intellects." End quote. So, if the status quo's supply line is based on a constant stream of non-critical thinkers, what would be the solution? Might I suggest that we learn to outgrow our problems? And that reminds me of a famous Einstein quote that I read when I was a kid that said problems cannot be solved by the same level of consciousness which creates them. He also said doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is a definition of insanity. What I see here on this planet are a bunch of people, small 1%, bunch of people, and you know, considering there's 4 billion, 1%, still a lot of people, who have unlimited access to money and resources. And because of this, other people want that money and access to those resources. So when these people say, hey, do this crazy thing that seems like it would poison people or kill people or destroy the planet for future generations, these people say yes because they want the money, which makes the person issuing out that money into a definition of a psychopath. Status quo, cartel capitalism, whatever nomenclature you want to give it, the establishment exists in a state of psychopathy, and that's what is reflected in our status quo because human actions direct conflict with human needs of survival. So, that sounds like a pretty big problem. Aren't there supposed to be professional people out there solving these problems? Well, when you read through their documents, they're the ones who have planned over the last century to do this to all of us who weren't being first-hand thinkers. They're like, hey, these guys aren't paying attention. Let's take over their education system. Let's do this. Let's do this. Let's take out these indigenous people. Let's take over the world with the CIA and do it, blah, 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 and do all these things. So I like to look at it in forms of positivity because that could be a pretty negative picture. Wow. It looks like an old photograph that's just been beaten and torn up and pasted back together and wrinkled up, and it no longer represents the picture that we all have in our heads. And we could sit here every day and look at it and be in pain and say, wow, that's really disturbing. It makes me depressed that all these people are losing that which they've all worked so hard for. Or you can look at it like an artist. You can say, wow, you could use some touch-up on that old photo. Let me take that photo, scan it into my computer, do what I do, identify all these cracks and creases and fill them in, maybe blow up the picture a little bit, colorize it instead of black and white. And look at that. It's a brand new thing. That's even better than the original thing, which was ruined, by the way, because it wasn't taken care of. But here's this new idea. And it represents the same thing, only in bright, bold color where you can see it up close. And the difference between the two pictures is what I would call a corrective layer. You can get upset with this old picture all you want, but you know you're working on this corrective layer. And once you place this layer on top, it turns this other picture into a thing of the past because what you have now is a work of art that represents the future. And so, to apply a corrective layer to our macrocosmic situation, which the team of this enterprise has undertaken for the past 5 years, is the journey which led to the understanding, which I call this part of the story, fortunate outcome. See, we were just trying to address the situation by emulating nature, and ironically, the natural solution ends up fulfilling the attributes of the perfect product. That's right. All those things that I listed that any listener, anyone who hears this, those things are impossible individually, let alone getting them all together. The perfect product, all those attributes apply to this gift in the form of a comprehensive, conscious curriculum that can be spread to anyone who wants it, anyone who needs it, anyone who might benefit from any of those attributes in the perfect product and is interested, they can get access to it. We've made the impossible possible. So let's give the perfect product a name and make it real. Right? That's how it works. 11 the hard way. You've got this cool idea and all of a sudden it becomes the name of an episode. Doing the impossible. Rolling 11 the hard way. So what we have is a comprehensive, conscious curriculum, or C-cubed, which is a reflection of the macrocosmic comprehension, the big picture that we've gotten through this journey. It's comprehensive, defined as having the attribute of comprising or including much of large content or scope. It's macrocosmic. Conscious, knowing or sharing the knowledge of anything together with another. Knowledge is based on certainty. Awesome. We have a process for attaining certainty inside the C-cubed. This is great. Curriculum, a regular course of study or training. Well, that's, you know, to me, equivalent to life. That's what's going on here every day. It's a classroom. So what we have is the trivium. And Jan's already sent you this package, and you've gone through the notes, and you've read about John Taylor Gatto and what he found out, and I've included a DVD. Norman Dodd interview. And this guy shows you where the foundations came in and took control of the education system. I think it's mind-blowing. And I think you'll think it's fantastic that we actually have pieces of media that we can communicate to other people and say, look, here's how it happened. It's all right here. You see the symptoms. Here's the root cause. What we're talking about is grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And I don't want to repeat all the like the interviews and the other publications that we've done on this because they're all good reads in and of themselves. So using the trivium brings a focus on the nomenclature and the words that we use and the words that are used to control us and influence our actions. Here's why nomenclature is important. It's been said that learning is a result of understanding, which is a result of good communication, which is a result of consistent language, which is a result of good nomenclature. I'll change that quote by Joseph Newman into accurate nomenclature. We need to use the words that we mean, and we need to look up the words we use. So that's what the grammar aspect is about. It's about all the individual parts and getting to know the individual parts that are involved with this problem. The logic aspect says, hey, take all these individual parts, here's how they fit together. And the rhetoric says, here's how the actual problem is working, and thus you know how to solve it because you know exactly how it goes on. You have an understanding. These are the same three steps that are found inside any instruction manual sold with most products. It tells you all the parts, tells you how to put it together, and then it tells you how to use it and how to troubleshoot it. Grammar, logic, rhetoric, the trivium, part of the Comprehensive Conscious Curriculum, or C-Cubed. Bucky Fuller once said, "You never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, as we want to do with the status quo, you build a new model that makes the existing model obsolete." Well, the existing model is made entirely of ignorance, sans critical and creative thought. So how do we make that obsolete, George? That's the perfect product. The perfect product validates that the impossible is made possible. It's about hope. It's a practical application of magic, being a practical application of understanding. Nothing illusory anymore. It has to do with understanding of your environment and yourself and how you interact in this place. It's a type of software for your mind in the form of an idea which, if studied and understood, acts as a moral, ethical, and metaphysical compass to help you navigate safely through the unknown and the uncertainty which accompanies life. Intellectual self-defense is equivalent to cognitive liberty. Now let me talk about the value of certainty. The Oracle of Delphi had this saying above the door. It said, "Know thyself." And that basically was their caveat emptor, saying if you knew yourself, you would not need to go into this place and listen to what this woman who sniffs these vapors has to say to you. But you being kings and tyrants who have traveled hundreds of miles with your caravans only to seek certainty from a less than certain source, yes, we'll take your money. We'll collect your money. We'll tell you that we have a process to predict the future because you don't have one for yourself. And the Phoenicians who developed the trivium during this time, while they're running this scam, we're founding the cities of Europe. Now, there's more oracle synchronicity that's going to pop up all through Project Constellation, which is much, much more interesting, probably at this point, than this whole conversation has been, George. So here's a few quotes which validate the solution. The first comes from Dorothy Sayers in her Lost Tools of Learning lecture from 1947 at Oxford. "I'm concerned only with the proper training of the mind to encounter and to deal with the formidable mass of undigested problems presented to it by the modern world. For the tools of learning are the same in any and every subject, and the person who knows how to use them will, at any age, get the mastery of a new subject in half the time and with a quarter of the effort expended by the person who has not these tools at his or her command. To learn six subjects without remembering how they were learnt does nothing to ease the approach to a seventh. To have learnt and remembered the art of learning, which is part of the Comprehensive Conscious Curriculum, makes the approach to every subject an open door." And that's a lot more inviting than some place that holds all these things that you can't deal with and then you never want to open those doors. When you have a process to deal with whatever comes through the door, then you're cool, then you're confident, then you're self-reliant, you're reliable, you're more valuable to your family and friends. Now let me throw you a quote from Bucky Fuller on education, because this blew my mind when I found out recently that he felt the same way and had found out the same things, and he wrote it down in this book, and it took me that long to get to it. He felt that, like almost all human organizations, including government, industries, and religions, the primary function of the educational system is self-perpetuation and acquisition of fame, fortune, and power for the people who control it. Not the people who participate in it, the people who control it. Now, you've recently become familiar with John Taylor Gatto and his position on education, having been the 1991 New York State and New York City School Teacher of the Year, and he famously resigned on the op-ed page of the Wall Street Journal. He said this, "I've come to believe that genius is an exceedingly common human quality, probably natural to most of us. And I began to wonder, reluctantly, whether it was possible that being in school itself was a dumbing down process. Was it possible that I had been hired not to enlarge children's power, but to diminish it? That seemed crazy on the face of it, but slowly I began to realize that the bells and the confinement, the crazy sequences, the age segregation, and the lack of privacy, the constant surveillance, and all the rest of the national curriculum of schooling were designed exactly as if someone had set out to prevent children from learning how to think and act, to coax them into addiction and dependent behavior." And lastly, there's Norman Dodd, who has a whole hour-long interview as he was the Congress-appointed director of a project that was looking into what was being done to our education system. And I have the whole transcript included for you because I couldn't just take one quote out of context. You really have to just sit and listen to what this gentleman has to say because he has first-hand knowledge, evidence, and experience of what is going on. And the perfect product allows us to address even the worst, crazy, scary problems that he describes can be addressed by what we're talking about here. So what makes us different from the animals is our brain, our mind, our memory, our ability to learn from observation, to record and communicate this knowledge, thereby making it wisdom. As knowledge becomes wisdom only when shared, and certainty is what predicates knowledge in the first place. We need this tool, and our ability to use tools to discover methodologies to outgrow our fears is our only way out. And our ability to explore far beyond the limits of our physical environment seems to be the invisible world, the invisible solution, the hidden variable, the thing that we need to find our solution in. Because right now, in all that's measured by science, the solution's not here. So we need to learn our way out of that box. The opportunity. The perfect product needed by 4 billion people who need it right now. So the mind is the only limit on this whole thing. If the perfect product were available to the characters in Hollywood films, nearly every plot line up until now would be a moot point because critical thinking is what's missing that makes almost every plot line plausible. And the characters demonstrating critical thinking would then spawn a whole new genre to revitalize the industry and participate in a self-healing solution. But I digress. The opportunity is to provide everyone with the tools to learn their way out of the problems that they face every day and how to mitigate the circumstances forming the root causes of those problems. As to prevent history from repeating an ever-escalating exponential exposition toward human extinction. The goal. Libraries are built for the few who actually use them. Libraries are local resources where individuals can fortify their knowledge and become first-hand thinkers, then forming local work and study groups to take an active role in problem-solving. The goal would be to expose millions, if not billions, to this potential of using the perfect product and letting them make an informed choice about their future, giving them a choice not to cede to the top 1% and their psychopathic ideas of creating human extinction. That just doesn't make any sense. Allowing these people to regain the sovereignty of judgment instead of having them outsource their thinking to statism, religion, and the magnetism of greed is what's going to let us save ourselves. Individuals who identify the massive amount of entropy in their economic situation will take voluntary, common-sense action to drop those dead-end services which do not facilitate their personal goals. You can call this analog economic redistribution, where you sell your old trophy products and invest in tools that you need to amplify your understanding, certainty, judgment, and thus your satisfaction in life. Another goal will be for individuals to identify their least useful actions and habits and to start to replace them with habits which facilitate their goals, starting with survival. Once people start rededicating at least 1 hour a day into applying the perfect product via review of MP3s, books, DVDs, and face-to-face conversations, the quote-unquote problems we face as humanity will be well on their way to solving themselves one mind at a time. A sort of self-healing panacea. And since it was the denial of the perfect product, one mind at a time, which caused the catastrophic crises of the early 21st century, the arrival of the perfect product at this time and it being made available to those who seek its wealth of mind is an ironic turn of events, because the revolution, our evolution, occurs in the mind and is reflected by the demonstration of learning from our so-called mistakes. A mistake's only a mistake until you learn to learn from it and demonstrate that through action that you've evolved. And that's what life's all about. The perfect product is a consequence of courtesy, consideration, and consistency. The compass which led us to this point of revelation. The close. If we're here for a purpose, then we have a responsibility and we need to start doing our homework and taking action. But we need to take action with certainty. We need to take informed action. And realizing that the others use this methodology of critical thinking and persuasive speech as a weapon against those who don't have it, including the people in this general audience, what position are you in without a form of intellectual self-defense, no matter what your level on the class scale? Because all confidence schemes target those without a methodology to deal with uncertainty and the unknown, those who are resistant to learning, and the people whose money Bernie made off with weren't poor or uneducated. They were among the richest people in America. So to think that those who participate in the schemes as described on the 2020 Hindsight Censorship on the Frontline DVD are not already ripping us off to an unimaginable degree at this point is naive. And it doesn't benefit any of us to be naive enough to let history continue repeating because we fail to see the importance of learning with certainty. So we've come to the point where we need to make a decision for ourselves. And the way that Ben Franklin used to make decisions, which I've seen to be a pretty good way of doing it from my personal experience, is to make a list of the pros and cons. What do we gain? What do we lose? So let's start out with the cons. What are you going to give up? You're going to give up your fear. And that's it. There's no need to go out and create love. Love is all that exists when you dissipate the fear. You dissipate fear through learning. Every time we have a fear, we should take that as an invitation to learn. It's fearful because we don't have knowledge about it. We don't have the tools to deal with it. But nobody fears getting up and brushing their teeth in the morning. You have the knowledge of why you're doing it. You have the experience having done it before, and you have the tools to do it today. So brushing your teeth is not a scary experience for people. However, if you take away knowledge, experience, and the use of tools to help us with our problems, well, then everything becomes a fearful, uncertain, anxiety-ridden experience that no one wants to deal with. So by having this process to transmute fear into positivity through a process of learning, we make the tragedy into hope. So let's look at the pros. Let's see what you might gain from the perfect product. Well, you get social capital. This is your time, your energy, and your actions being directed into activities which empower yourself and others. Without using coercion, without using force, without taking away anyone's free will. You have intellectual capital. Your ideas and what you think and the perspectives that you hold increase in relative value because now they're relevant to your survival. This leads into physical capital. Your finances increase because you actually understand what money is and how it's used as a magnet to get people to do things they don't want to do. You'll have emotional responsibility and be able to respect yourself and the emotions of others. You'll have social responsibility. You'll be able to act as a mature adult with other human beings, whether or not they have gone through the same process of maturity or not. You'll recognize them as other people just like you, dealing with the same uncertainty and the fears that come along with the status quo. You'll have civic responsibility because you'll be able to constructively participate in your community in such a way that it brings about realistic, plausible, enactable, sustainable solutions. You'll have an expansion of creative thought. Now you're better prepared to visualize and create more hope. You'll have an elevation of critical thought. You're better equipped to act on fact, to take actions with certainty, which generate your satisfaction, non-coercively. This is how we get to peace. You'll have self-reliant because you're experienced enough to adapt, evolve, and overcome the challenges that life presents you with, giving you first-hand knowledge and experience. And you'll be able to learn new methods and strategies to survive and help those around you. You'll have improved communication and cooperative skills. You'll be better prepared to convey the ideas inspired by critical thinking and critical observation and creative thought, creative problem solving. You'll practice a streamlined and effective time management system. You're getting more done, being more effective, being less stressed because you're wisely employing your most valuable asset to your advantage, time. Life is music, and time is the space between the notes. Most importantly, you'll have accurate perspectives reflective of the actual reality. Your investment into self-awareness and critical and creative thinking spills over into how you see the world, clearly and without ego. This objective perspective allows you to precisely examine, without fear, the reality that we're all changing together, one mind at a time. Now, currently we do this through the community, Tragedy and Hope. And in the future, we're going to turn Tragedy and Hope into a fulfillment and support system to deliver the perfect product. So what are you sacrificing? You lose your fear. You sacrifice your fear and you gain your confidence. That's the difference between existing and non-existing. There's no point existing without confidence. And at this point, there's no reason to have false confidence and depend on that can be taken away by the authority that granted you that false confidence. It's better to know thyself, to get familiar with your surroundings and the people that you inhabit this planet with, and learn to break down the barriers that were purposely created to divide and conquer all of us. They use the Hegelian dialectic, which to simplify would be a thumb and forefinger. It's a pincer movement. It's two opposing sides which are controlled by the same hand. In other words, the same mind is controlling both sides. The same money is controlling both sides. Democrat, Republican, they do not exist. Those are illusions. We need to get back to reality. And to get back to reality, we need a logical, rational, mature, comprehensive, and empathetic strategy in practical application, in action. Human survival depends on it, and it's oxymoronic to continue making mistakes after you've been given this valid data from which to learn. So where are we now? We have a team of people who are ready, willing, and already undertaking this process to get it out there. But we sure could use your help. Sooner or later, you'll realize the need for the perfect product. And when you do, you know where to find us. So George, if you're still sitting there listening at this point, and you're still curious, and you've been mildly amused and yet gently informed, I think we need to cogently and consistently communicate the story of the unintentional creation of the perfect product, along with the perfect product, to 4 billion people here and now, and the multitude of billions of people who need it in the future. Those who thrive as a result of the perfect product transmuting the status quo into a reality where human actions are no longer oxymoronically opposed to the human necessities for survival, both short and long term. We have a responsibility to our friends, our families, and generations to come, but first, we have to accept the responsibility of being ourselves. And I think it takes more courage to be yourself and not outsource your thinking and all that comes with dealing with the unknown than it does for a soldier to stand and fight on a foreign battlefield. So we got through it. This is the first step. Next steps? Well, I'd suggest listen to the general presentation that I've recorded for the perfect product. We've already done that. Good job. It's helpful to have a first step and a goal. It's easily achievable. So step one, we've already done that. Awesome. Step two, watch the 2020 Hindsight Censorship on the Frontline DVD. And after you watch that film, explore the bonus features. Project Constellation, 2006 audio message. It's also along with the transcript in this package. Play with the perfect product, also on the DVD under the name The Lost Tools of Learning in the Trivium. listen to everything on that DVD after you watch the movie. If you have access to a computer, there's also some files on a DVD-ROM, which happens when you put the DVD in your computer. But I think Jan has sent you most of those attachments. And then let's talk. And if we undertake the miraculous step of securing a loan from somebody we know at this point after this 7-year journey so we can fly out and meet you in person and exchange some positive energy and move this all forward, then we are totally willing to do that and would appreciate the opportunity. And I would only ask that if we take the trouble to undertake such a exodus from here and come out there, that we get to spend more than a couple hours with you. Maybe we get to spend a couple hours for a couple days over a week or something like that and really be able to exchange some meaningful information. And between the team, if you're interested, I think we can all put this together in a way that is truly amazing. So I'll leave you with the contents of this package. And again, early happy birthday. Enjoy the compass. And I'll close by repeating a statement I once heard from Terence McKenna. And at least this part of what he said I found to be factually valid. The world is made up of words. And if you know the right words, you can make of it what you will. Thank you for your time, your inspiration, past, present, and future. Peace. I'd like to thank Jan Ervin for his invaluable investment of research, thought, friendship, and action. Because without his circle of friends, you couldn't have heard Parhesia and would still be in the dark about the need for intellectual self-defense for everybody across this planet, and how the Trivium method of critical thinking and creative problem solving plus you equals the perfect product. Don't forget to check out the show notes on peacerevolution.org and the additional interviews on Corbett Report featuring Paul Verge. And if you're interested in learning more about how to make consistently accurate judgments, that's what critical thinking is all about. And since the entire status quo is dependent on us making poor decisions, why not click the invitation link to the Tragedy and Hope community located in the show notes? Become a trial subscriber, check it out, consume some media, and learn for yourself how to outgrow the status quo. And with that, I'd like to appeal to you for your support, inspire you to do your homework, and thank you for tuning in and not dropping out. Peace.